This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hi and welcome to this week's show of Property Matters. I'm Greg Watson. It's lovely having your company today. There's got quite a bit on the show today. A little bit about the new pet rules for landlords and tenants that will be coming out in the near future. We're going to look at some recent housing awards and a surprising winner there. Going to look at plants you can plant in your garden to keep the mosquitoes away, which could be handy as we head to the warmer seasons. As well as that, we're going to have a look at what the Reserve Bank's doing and what's happening with home loan rates and where that might go and what effect it might have on you. So those are just a snippet of what's on today's show, and let's get into it. The first thing I thought to talk about today is the new pet rules for rental properties. So what landlords and tenants need to know. This is from an article on tenancy.govt.nz. So if you wanted to have a look at it in more detail, that's fine. But effectively, New Zealand has this habit of following Australian tenancy law just a few years later. And one of those I've had in Australia for in most of the states of Australia is around pets and rental properties. So they're likely to take effect later this year or early next year. It's just when they decide to do so. What is it in a nutshell? Well, the new pet consent and pet bond rules can only be used after the dates the law come into effect. So here they are. Tenants must get written consent from their landlord to keep a pet unless the tenancy agreement already allows it. So they must get permission in writing. That's the first thing. The landlords must say yes unless there are reasonable grounds to say no, such as property suitability or local bylaw restrictions. So interestingly, this will have to be tested in court when the time comes. So you have to have reasonable grounds to say no, or otherwise a landlord must say yes. Landlords must respond to the request to keep a pet within 21 days. Landlords can set fair conditions when giving consent, for example, asking for a pet bond or requiring carpet cleaning at the end of a tenancy if the pet is allowed indoors. If a landlord says no to a pet without a good reason or does not reply within 21 days, they can be fined up to $1,500. Not to mention the tenants, keeping a pet without consent is an unlawful act with a fine of up to $750. So let's talk about the pet bond and what that is. If a pet is approved, landlords may charge a pet bond of up to 2 weeks' rent in addition to the general bond. Pet bonds will be managed by the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, or MBIE, just like general tenancy bonds. And how does this affect the tenant's responsibilities? So tenants are tenants are liable for all pet-related damage beyond fair wear and tear, even if the pet belongs to another tenant. So damage includes anything resulting from keeping a pet, not just direct damage caused by the animal. If multiple tenants live in the property, all may be held responsible for pet-related damage. So it's important that tenants and flatmates know that. So that's the general gist of it. Tenants can ask to have a pet. The landlord must answer in 21 days and kind of unreasonably withhold that consent, but they can impose conditions as well. When they're talking about a pet bond, if someone moves into a house and they don't have a pet and then they ask for one, you could ask for a pet bond to be paid at that time. And that sort of goes into the pool of general bond, so to speak. All right, just moving on. I talked a little bit about summer on its way and mosquitoes, etc. What could be more helpful than planting 6 plants you can grow to help keep mosquitoes away? And mosquitoes are without a doubt one of the most annoying things about enjoying the outdoors during summer, and they're already buzzing around this spring. And this article is by Rachel Gavin on stuff.co.nz. There are plenty of ways to deal with these insects, she says, from sprays to candles to zappers, but there is a completely natural way to deter them and make your garden beautiful at the same time. Many of the herbs, flowers and shrubs we adore also double as mosquito deterrents, so why not pop a few in your garden or in pots around your courtyard to boost your mosquito prevention efforts? So here's six plants that have mosquito deterrent qualities that you can plant in the backyard. The first one is basil. It's very tasty to us, but it's annoying as heck for mosquitoes. One is that they hate the fragrance, and the second is it's toxic to their larvae, so they won't lay any eggs near it. Marigolds are bright and happy flowers that are easy to grow and provide a splash of colour wherever they are planted. The reason that they're great at deterring mozzies is because they have a smell that the insects hate. Here's another one you could use, potentially in your tea, etc., and that's peppermint. Peppermint is a popular herb for anyone who loves using fresh produce to flavour their cooking, and it deters mosquitoes thanks to the menthol in the plant and the minty smell it emits. Here's another one which looks pretty, and that's a lemon-scented geranium. Geraniums are a hardy, easy-to-grow plant that comes in many varieties, and if you choose a citrus-scented one, the plant will also help deter mosquitoes thanks to its citronella content and fragrance. I'm loving it. Good planting ideas. Rosemary, great for roast potatoes, by the way. Rosemary has a woody fragrance mosquitoes hate, so it's another good option to add to deter the insects that also and also have it on hand for that cooking. Lavender, oh, I love the smell of lavender. Strikingly beautiful and beloved for its calming scent, lavender is also said to deter mosquitoes. So there we go. Just to recap, in reverse order, we had lavender, rosemary, lemon-scented geranium, peppermint, marigolds, and basil. So there we go. If you're a person that really does not like mosquitoes, then there's a whole new garden there for you. A bit of colour, a bit of herbs for flavouring, and so forth. So that's really, pretty cool. This article from Stuff around people buying a property by Shilpi Araragaikwad has the headline, "Exceeded all of our expectations. Tiny town with brand new homes under $600,000 draws young families." That's pretty cool. Brand new homes under $600,000. So 7 years ago, when her husband drove through the streets of Kaitangata, Lee Shield took one look around and said, "Really? Here?" Back then, the tiny South Otago town felt frozen in time with faded homes and endless paddocks where horses grazed. "It looked like we'd driven straight into the 1980s, Shield said. "I honestly couldn't picture raising a family here. But today, the mother of two, along with her husband, lives in a brand new brick home right across the road from the local primary school. It's a home that Shields helped design as part of the plan that revived the small settlement of Kaitangata, about an hour south of Dunedin. Once a coal mining town, the tiny town saw its population shrink from over 1,200 in the 50s to around 800. So in 2016, an incentive program offering affordable house and land packages was launched to attract new residents. Shields House was developed as part of a project led by the Kaitangata Housing Trust, an initiative started by four passionate locals determined to breathe life back into their community. The trust identifies sections that are then purchased by the Clutha District Council. The trust then arranges funding to build on them, sells the finished homes to first-time buyers at affordable prices." What a great idea. Good way of revitalising the town. "The trust showed us a few empty sections. We picked one across from the school. It felt just right. Our sons could literally walk to class. The trust handled the build through local contractors, and the Shields worked with them to customise small details like the tiles in the bathroom and brick exterior instead of weatherboard. Most people have to juggle rent and a mortgage while they build, but here it was made possible for us by the trust." So Shield, who relocated from Waimate, said within 2 years her entire family is deeply rooted in the close-knit community. His six-year-old son Cohen spends weekends fishing and biking around the quiet streets, and her 18-month son Cooper attends the local childcare centre. We're part of the local BMX club, rugby club, Measley Beach Fishing Club, and as recent, my husband has joined the local volunteer fire brigade. I love that our boys will grow up learning rural life skills, but having all the necessary amenities nearby. Isn't that great? And it depends where you are in life and what's important to you and those sorts of things, but it's great that they can have that start and be in a community. So it's probably not for everybody, but it is something that that I think does suit certain people. I mean, one of the things she said is that everybody helps out each other. "I know if something bad happens, people wrap around you. There's a real sense of care here." And she said, "Living in the town exceeded all her expectations. You've got nothing to lose, but so much to gain." So she even said, "We obviously don't have any intention of selling this house. Maybe one day even our kids will end up with it." So she said, "All the essentials are right in town. A dairy, fish and chip shop, a golf club, newly built community centre, and even a swimming pool that's set to be heated in the next 12 months. So there we go. It then goes on and talks to various locals who live there. Shows a picture of the house, which is just a nice three bedroom home, which is pretty cool. So that's always an option. It just depends on life and if you want to uproot and try out some of those things. But if that sounds like an interesting lifestyle for you, and if you feel that things are tough with regards to how much homes cost, that is definitely an option. You can certainly imagine people from larger centres moving to enjoy that. This article from Stuff says Reserve Bank to loosen mortgage lending rates. Reserve Bank to loosen mortgage lending rates. Now, this is actually from a couple of weeks ago now, so some of this has taken place. But the loan-to-value ratio restrictions on mortgage lending will be loosened from December, the Reserve Bank says. From the 1st of December, the share of new lending to owner-occupiers allowed by retail banks with a loan-to-value ratio above 80% will rise to 25%, up from 20%. For property investors, the share of new lending allowed with the LVR above 70% will increase from 10% up from 5%. What that means is the banks are getting permission, or have been given the go-ahead, if you like, to lend more money to people that don't quite make the ratio there. So there'll be more lending. Debt-to-income restrictions have also been reviewed, but the Reserve Bank had decided to leave those settings unchanged. The Acting Assistant Governor for Financial Stability, Angus McGregor, said the Reserve Bank's decision followed a review of the LVR framework prompted by the introduction of debt-to-income restrictions last year. We concluded that the introduction of debt-to-income restrictions mean LVR settings can be less restrictive on average. So you still have to be able to show that based on how much you earn, there is an upper limit to what you can lend. That's what the debt-to-income one means. But the size of your deposit can be smaller in more cases now. So good news for people who are trying to try and get on the housing ladder there. And the article just goes on there to talk about what effect that might have. Now, another thing that the Reserve Bank's done reasonably recently is been dropping the OCR, with the new Reserve Bank governor has decided to shake things around a little bit. So that leads to this article by Susan Edmonds of Radio New Zealand. Will home loan rates drop below 4%? Home loan interest rates continue to drop as the Reserve Bank pursues its path to an official or lower official cash rate and wholesale markets fall. But with almost half of New Zealand's home loans floating or due to refix in the next 6 months, many borrowers may be wondering how much further the rates could go. Is it possible that we could see them drop below 4%? Well, here's some arguments for and against. Here's the yes argument. On one hand, David Cunningham, Chief Executive of Squirrel, says yes. He said if the official cash rate, the OCR, dropped to 2.25% next month, as many expect it will, one-year home loan rates should creep below 4% in early 2026. He said factors that affected the one-year rate included wholesale swap rates, which generally reflect where the markets expect the OCR to go and what banks were paying households and businesses that deposited money with them. The catalyst for further reductions will be the banks continuing to lower their term deposit interest rates and the gradual flow through to lower overall bank funding costs. He said Squirrel had built an AI model to help predict interest rates based on wholesale rate data. Looking backwards, the outputs of the model are pretty consistent with what we have seen in reality in terms of how wholesale rates fluctuations have flowed through to actual mortgage rates in the market. So looking ahead and assuming economists and the wider market are right in thinking that OCR will drop to 2.25% in late November, the model shows it will likely to head for sub 4% one-year fixed mortgage rate sometime early next year. He said while the modelling showed one-year fixed home loan rate just above 4%, banks like to offer rates ending in 0.99 to get customer attention. So that's is that view. There's also a maybe not view of whether it'll drop below 4. So Infometrics chief forecaster Gareth Kiernan said the rate below 4% seemed a stretch. The last time interest rates were coming down in 2019, rates got under 4% in March with the OCR at 1.75%, and it had been at that level for over 2 years. And the Reserve Bank was on the verge of starting on another round of cuts that would ultimately take the OCR to 1% by August that year. He said another 25 basis points off the OCR did not look like enough to get any of the wholesale rates down enough to get a rate under 4%. Particularly when longer-term rates seem to be more well-anchored at higher levels, I think you'd need to get an OCR of 2% before sub 4% becomes a possibility, at least from the big five banks, although sometimes smaller lenders can go a bit more off-piste with their rates to try for a bit of attention. So any change, of course, is great for people with mortgages. Even a quarter of a percent, a 0.25 change in interest rates can mean for some people $20 to $40 a week that they are better off. So that will help the economy should that really continue to go. Now, here's a bit of a scary article about what can happen if you ignore requests from local government to do with your property. And this is a incredible story, but you can see how things could have been avoided several times through the story. Now, this is from Marty Sharp of Stuff. Couple ordered to pay $1 million for cleanup of a property that was worth $147,000. Now, how would that happen? A couple whose house burned down has been ordered to pay more than $1 million for the cleanup of their property worth $147,000. The Hawera house, owned by Charles and Horowai Hana, burned down in August of 2022. The South Taranaki District Council subsequently became aware that fire debris had spread to neighbouring homes, so engaged a contractor to remove the debris and to spray a suppressant on the fire debris on the Hana property to prevent it from spreading further. Samples of the fire debris revealed it contained asbestos fibres. Many homes do, older homes. So that's why I'm bringing this article to you, because we'll see what happens next. When neighbours complained a few months later that the fire debris was still spreading from the property, the council tried to engage with the Hanas to have the remains of the house demolished and the property decontaminated. The Hanas told the council they would clear the site using a team of volunteers to manually remove the fire debris and asbestos-containing materials. The council had an asbestos demolition report completed, which revealed there was significant potential for asbestos fibre to be released on the property, and it posed a risk of injury. It's nasty. Asbestos can get into your lungs and it doesn't come back out again. So council staff met the Hanas again to share the report's findings, and the couple said they'd let the council know how they were going to remediate the property. But the Hanas did not get back to the council. So in late March 2023, the council issued a warrant to remove the danger at the Hanas' expense, and contractors were engaged to remediate the property. Remediation was completed in May 2023. The total cost to the council of all reports, tests and contractors was over $1 million. The council tried to engage with the Hanas several times between March and July 2024 to discuss the costs and any potential payment arrangement proposals. The Hanas did not make themselves available to attend any meetings. The council served a statement of claim on the Hanas in October last year. The Hanas did not file a defence, and the council subsequently engaged a quantity surveyor who reduced the cost by about $20,000 to just less than $1 million. So in a recent High Court ruling, Justice Helen McQueen found the council was entitled to a default judgment against Hanas of over $1 million, plus costs and disbursements of a further $7,000. The property's council rating valuation was $147,000. So this article does beg a question from me, and some of you may have picked up on this. Did those people have insurance? Because what's happened here is a fire at a property. You would think, but I'm not sure, you might want to check with your insurance company, who does a cleanup. So a house burns down, your house is insured, so you can build a new one. But what about all the rubbish that's there, and what if it is contaminated? Certainly the properties that contain asbestos, and there is a lot of them, then that's something which is a concern these days. So maybe check with your insurer if you have that. And certainly if you are ever sadly involved in a situation like this, then keep that dialogue open with the council. There could have been anything from a compromise to negotiations and so forth, but ignoring a situation doesn't help. Probably cleaning it up yourself, not the best thing to do, certainly from a health and safety point of view, but unless you've got very skilled people, you'd still have to abide by the council's bylaws, I'd imagine, on disposal of the asbestos. Okay, occasionally I bring articles from Christchurch just because there's quite a lot happening there, and this one by Liz McDonald in the Press. Williams Corp to build 100 apartments on the last east frame block. So developer Williams Corporation has been chosen by the Crown to build on the last remaining block of Christchurch's east frame housing area. There'll be 100 apartments on the land. There's pictures here. It looks pretty amazing. Development's worth about $90 million. So the development will fit in nicely with other buildings. Just having a look at the here, it looks like it's about 8 stories tall. It was just a empty site, of course, in central Christchurch, which is just the case following the earthquake, etc. So they are doing a lot down there. If you haven't been to Christchurch in some time, very interesting what they're doing there, and plenty of development and building going on. It's also a place where house prices are holding up quite well, and supply and demand is holding up quite well with regards things like rental properties and the property market in general. Now, this article, probably just to finish with, is by Damien Venuto of Stuff Money, and the article says, "The Promise and Problem with Property, the Truth About Owning a House and Your Wealth." So property has for decades been the default investment for New Zealanders to secure their financial future. The long-running joke has been that New Zealand is a housing market with bits tacked on, and you can almost feel a tangible discomfort as a nation wills house prices to pick up again. The Reserve Bank is certainly doing its part by easing the official cash rate, pushing interest rates lower, and then following that up by easing loan-to-value ratios, the LVR. The LVRs are often called speed limits because they limit the amount of high LVR, in other words, low deposit, lending banks can do to manage risk in the housing market. They determine what portion of a bank's overall lending can be to those who have a small or lower than 20% deposit. We talked earlier about the new rules, how they're changing, making it easier for homeowners and investors, and it makes them easier to get their hands on property. Major banks are also looking to capitalise on the low interest environment, dangling the carrot of interest rates as low as 4.49% in advertising this week. So as all these pieces fall into place, the question re-emerges, is residential property still our most reliable path to wealth, or should we be looking beyond the bricks and mortar to other options? Shamabil Yaqub, the chief economist at Simplicity, says it's a bit of a myth that we've only relied on housing for wealth. He points to the latest data from Statistics New Zealand, which indicates a growing proportion of our wealth is now attributed to Kiwis' financial assets and in their own businesses. Despite this, more than half of all households' net wealth is still tied up in property. Yaqub is quick to point out this isn't a bad thing, given the non-financial benefits that also come with property. You take on a mortgage, so you get access to the asset, which means you've got a place to live, he says. It comes with those non-financial benefits that are also really important, that stability, that connection to community, and that security in the event that something goes wrong. Those things are still very real. Yaqub says, these are still valid reasons to buy a property, but this decision won't necessarily boost your wealth the way it did for previous generations. Housing has been an absolutely fabulous investment, but we're starting to see that it can go up or down like any other asset. So the success of the property market in New Zealand has long been built upon a simple promise that prices would increase and families would be entitled to tax-free gains on the growth in value when they eventually sold. This made many New Zealand families incredibly wealthy, but that promise isn't as steadfast as it once was. Since the record highs of COVID, we've seen the property market slide back to where it was before the pandemic. High interest rates and increased supply have also meant that property values remained relatively flat. Every homeowner would have felt this firsthand when they saw the updated CVs released earlier this year. Dean Anderson, the CEO of Kuna Wealth, recognises the disappointment of a slow housing market might cause for many, but questions whether it would really be good for the country to see prices take off again. The fact that our housing market has been flat now is probably a real benefit for New Zealand in the long term, says Anderson, pointing to how New Zealanders are looking at wealth building through a different lens. What we've noticed at Kernel is people in their late 20s, 30s and 40s have got good careers and who are really just focused on putting aside cash and building up a really strong big nest egg for their retirement through investing in the share market and investing in KiwiSaver, he says. It's a real trend shift. The biggest challenge to building your wealth in this way is that it requires enormous discipline when you don't have the threat of losing your house hanging over your head. The mortgage forces the habits by forcing you to save or invest, he says. The hardest thing for most people compared to property is actually creating habits and consistently putting the money aside and not letting emotions come into play. Anderson is also quick to point out that the gains we saw historically in the property market aren't guaranteed to return in future. So previous generations were the benefactors of making one simple decision, which was to borrow a large amount of money, buy an asset and hold it, says Anderson. The thing that has supported that asset for 40 or 50 years has not been their own decisions, it's actually been the fact that we've had falling interest rates who have gone from single household incomes to double household incomes. So those two factors combined have contributed significantly to house prices increasing, but we've seen in recent years that past performance isn't always indicative of what an asset will do in future. So investing in share markets is often perceived to be more volatile than property, but I can guarantee you that if everybody had an app on their phone showing them the real-time value of their house on a daily basis, we'd be much less comfortable with investing in property, which is quite true. The topic of property value also lends itself to a conversation about maintenance. When you hold a tangible asset, the onus is on you to ensure it remains in a state that retains its value. In layperson's term, owning a house or an investment property necessitates a decent amount of elbow grease to keep it in decent shape. For property investors, this responsibility has also become more pronounced in recent years with regulatory shifts that have improved conditions for renters. The previous Labor coalition government brought through a raft of changes to rental properties, raising standards for initiatives like Healthy Homes, says Nick Brunson, the principal economist of Infometrics. That's really raised the bar for private landlords. And the point that Brunson makes here is that property investment requires continuous maintenance to ensure the asset retains its value and earning potential. This is quite different from investing in shares and equities, which don't. So given the burden that comes with maintaining a house and the accessibility of alternative investments, it's a little surprise to Brunson that investors are now looking at other options to grow their wealth in the longer term. We've had some big changes in technology and it's just a lot easier and more accessible now to invest in other assets, he says. The other thing to keep in mind here is that it isn't a question of one or the other. Many KiwiSavers are invested in the share market today with a view to drawing down on that money to put down a deposit on their first home. Others are paying down their mortgage while continuing to contribute to ensure they have enough in the bank when it comes to retirement. The point here is, as it often is in investment, is that having all your wealth dependent on a single asset is always a risky strategy. Today's market doesn't care what happened 10, 20 or 30 years ago, and it will ebb and flow as it pleases. The point being that betting your future wealth on the promise of property prices continuing to rise indefinitely is as risky as putting that hope in any investment. And that's all we've got time for this week on Property Matters. Thank you to the team here at MPR, Manawatū People's Radio, for putting this show together. And you can find this show where you find all good podcasts, as well as on the MPR website, mpr.nz. If you were doing a search for podcasts, just search Greg Watson and Property Matters to find the show. And you can subscribe and you can hear regularly updates just like this. See you in a week's time.
If you enjoy this MPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.